We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match. With Indeed. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Fill her up.
You're listening to the Gas Digital Network.
Ladies and gentlemen, your host for the House of Hardcore podcast, Tommy Dreamer!
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the House of Hardcore podcast. I'm your host, Tommy Dreamer, and this week we have probably, perhaps, one of the most deadliest women out there, Masha Slamovich. How the hell are you, Tommy?
I'm doing pretty great. How are you, Tommy?
I am well. Thank you for doing this. You're just stepping off of a flight, and I really, really appreciate it after a hard-hitting matchup in for Jonathan Gresham's company. Down in the ATL, so she got up early. I don't want her to beat me up because she's pretty damn tough, because I also know who trained her. So with that said, what got you hooked in the wonderful world of professional wrestling?
I just loved professional wrestling, you know, for as long as I can remember. I just remember being maybe 4 or 5 years old, and, you know, I saw professional wrestling on TV, and I just kind of, you know, sat and watched for like 10 minutes, and it just spoke to me. And I just knew that that was my calling in life. And I just never let that go. I could never escape that thought or that path ever since.
I love it. Me neither. Was there a certain person that was your person?
Not at the beginning. It was just the excitement of wrestling itself, I suppose. But in the very beginning, Chris Benoit and The Undertaker and Dynamite Kid, those were the people that stood out to me.
Dynamite Kid must have been like tape trading stuff, because you're pretty damn young. So Benoit and Undertaker, I get, but excuse me. That was great for your era, because you go to that thing called YouTube and you could look up everybody. My era, when I was growing up, I had to be a tape trader, and I had to wait in the mail to people send me VCR tapes of all these wrestlers that I wanted to see. So it's pretty cool that when the internet is good, it's good for a reason, and that you can look up and see all these great performers. How do you go about becoming like a pro wrestler?
Well, when I was 16, funny enough, I thought that I was already like getting old and I should have started. So I looked up wrestling schools in New York, and I landed on two options, being House of Glory or the World of Unpredictable Wrestling that was run by Johnny Rods. And I ended up going to the World of Unpredictable Wrestling for pretty much my first 2 years of training.
I just had a conversation with Marty Bell. And would Johnny get in the ring with you? Because he was up there in age.
He did sometimes. I definitely remember Johnny coming into the ring, and then, you know, somebody would get out of hand, and all of a sudden he's grappling. He's like, hey, look, I can still touch your toe to your ear, even though I'm 83. So it was always an entertaining time.
When he'd be stretching people.
Yes.
We actually called him yesterday, and he was back at the gym.
Oh, yeah, that's great. I'm really happy to hear that.
Because, you know, he had some health issues, but I spoke to him yesterday, and he's like, what are you doing, papito? And then so you were there for 2 years?
Yes, pretty much. From November of 2014, definitely all the way through to July of 2016. And that was when I had my actual debut abroad, obviously.
That's where your first match was?
Yes.
Where?
In Japan, actually, because of the relationship that Johnny Rods had with the Japanese promotion Reina at the time. I ended up getting scouted and having my first five matches over in Japan.
Wow. How old are you?
I had just turned 18 a few weeks prior to this.
And you have to move to Japan?
For a month and a half, yeah.
Wow, man. That's amazing. Besides, was there any language? I mean, obviously some language complications or...
Certainly the language is, you know, very different from English. So, you know, I did find it to be a little bit difficult, but I also found it to be easy to work around and easy to adjust. So myself and the Japanese culture meshed quite well, thankfully.
Yeah. My first time going there, I had to live there for 6 weeks and I went there for All Japan. I loved it. And I had an opportunity to go train in their dojo. I didn't, which... I don't regret because that whole ECW thing worked out, but it was, that's all I wanted to do when I started wrestling. When I first got smart to wrestling, I wanted to be a star in either All Japan or New Japan. I didn't care about WCW or WWF. I wanted to be a star there, but like I said, it worked out. I can't believe your first five matches are in Japan. That's an amazing experience. For anybody also living there, did you have to live at the dojo and stuff?
Not that first time. I actually did on my second tour in 2020, but the first tour we stayed in this, it was like a weird apartment that was for sort of long-term, but sort of not travelers. So we had like a communal kitchen and showers and like a gaming room, but then everyone had their own bedroom, which had a bed, a mini fridge, a desk, a balcony, and a closet.
Wow. So you're also now doing indies in the States once you come back, or?
Yes, that's correct.
I don't know your journey, so I just, and that first part of it, when you first get there, I just interviewed Sam Shaw. Like, do you feel like, boom, you made it? Or it's just like, you're just shell-shocked in the sense of you don't know what to expect?
Yeah, I didn't know what to expect, you know, fresh out of high school, never having been really abroad like that by myself, aside from Russia. I didn't know what to expect. So I just kind of took everything as it came. I just remember being picked up at the airport by a guy who spoke no English. And he was just holding a giant poster pointing at my face, like hoping that I walk over. He's like, oh, okay, you look like you match. Let's go.
That's amazing. So you're here in the States, you're doing all that stuff. Are you going back and forth to Japan, or are you doing just indies and then going back to Japan? Like what's your schedule?
So I came back to America and I went from wrestling, you know, in Japan to wrestling on the local, whatever indie runs locally. And it was quite the transition because, you know, very different worlds of the level of wrestling, the way that people conduct themselves, the pay, you know. So I wrestled on the indies. I ended up doing places like CZW, WSU. I can't even remember other places. But unfortunately, I did have to take some time off due to an injury. And then after that, I came back, but my main focus was on working outside of the United States. So I focus on wrestling in places like Canada, Puerto Rico, Dominican Republic, and even, you know, my home country of Russia before I really focused my time on the indies for 6 months of 2019. And that was right before I'd went back to Japan for a different company.
Now, I had heard of you when, I don't remember where I heard of you, but I remember when Impact's doing the all female pay-per-view, and I don't know who recommended you? Do you recall any of this? Or
to my knowledge, it was Mickey James, because she was the one who recommended me for Empower.
Yes.
And she seemed very happy with my work, thankfully. So that's how I ended up being the pick your poison match for Deonna Purrazzo at the Knockouts Knockdown.
And you had this match, an excellent match, especially like with, you're not going to have a bad match with Deonna. I don't think you were not going to have a bad match with you, but I mean, this is kind of like your first real opportunity.
Yes. Yes. As a prolonged singles match, this was the first opportunity.
And do they offer you a contract on the spot? Like,
yes.
Tell me how that goes.
Yes. I had no idea that any of that was going to happen. So I just knew, you know, we go out there, we do our match and stay at ringside. You know, I assumed that perhaps, you know, somebody else was coming out or something that I wasn't aware of was going to take place. And Gail Kim comes out and she just walks right to me and tells me to get in the ring. I had no clue that any of this was going on. And then immediately she got on the microphone and, you know, praised the match and offered me a contract. And I was just completely blown away in the moment.
How freaking awesome is that, man? That's like a real great accomplishment of how hard that you worked or how great of a match that you had that happened. That's real emotional. And that's, you know, it's cool that you got a lot of people. I mean, you think about the struggle that you had up until then of trying to make it. And then you have one match and boom, you get hooked / signed because they see how talented you are. I'm older. These are cool experiences that, you know, reflecting on is just like, man, that, because that doesn't really happen.
Definitely. You know, I have heard of stories that, or seen little clips of that kind of stuff happening for people, but I never, you know, expected that I would end up in those shoes. So, you know, you never really expect that kind of stuff for yourself. And I've always just prided myself on being humble about my accomplishments and just focus on the work that I've put in. So I just firmly believe that hard work leads you to reap, you know, the rewards of your work. It's as simple as that.
So I also knew you from doing the death match stuff. Also for females, there's not a lot of females that go out there. You and I have talked separately about this, and it's just kind of like, I was like, hey, you got a scar and you got cuts, blah, 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 blah. And you just like, oh, I think it's cool. Which is, I get it. Cause I'd be a hypocrite. And I get that rush, but do you do a lot of death type of matches as well? More so on the indies than, you know, what you're doing in Impact.
Yes, I do. I mean, it's as simple as that. I love death match and there's really no other feeling. There's nothing that I found that makes me feel so focused in the moment, alive, aware. It's, you know, I don't think you know until you do it, until you get in there with somebody who also knows, you know, the art of the style. And, you know, there's just a rush. It's, I guess it's how people get hooked on doing drugs, because I suppose deathmatch is, you know, my drug of choice. Ever since I discovered indie wrestling, I immediately discovered CZW. You know, I watched all of the Cages of Death and I was saying, yeah, mom, I want to do this when I'm older. She's certainly hoping I wasn't and is not thrilled with my choices, but I'm definitely happy. And, you know, as a matter of fact, I have a hardcore match coming up tomorrow. So who knows how that will lead.
Which do you prefer? I'm thinking you're preferring death matches as opposed to regular matches.
I,
or it's different.
Love professional wrestling, okay, as a whole. And I believe that the very best comes from versatility. So I don't think I could choose a certain style to say, this is, you know, this is what I love more than anything else. I never wanted to be boxed in to a category or a style. I always wanted to transcend all of that. So to me, it's being good and doing good in all of the styles of professional wrestling is what's enjoyable to me.
Nice. Trust me, I get it about being boxed in, because I thought I had to be this prototypical 1990s good looking baby face, and that wasn't me. And I found my niche through ECW and being crazy and doing a lot of hardcore stuff that was way before its time. You said something interesting that I wanted to touch about, that you say about the style and the art, because there's a lot of people who, I literally could tell two people across the street from me, hey, break light tubes over across each other's head. And I don't feel that's wrestling. But when I have studied, like, you know, Terry Funk, Mick Foley, some of Onita's stuff, like, there is an art form to death matches. And I like the fact that you talked about the psychology of a death match, because there is a thing, and it is a certain niche. Like, there's horror movies, and then there's gore, which is a different type of a horror movie where they love that type of thing. So can you explain that a little bit?
Certainly. Nothing infuriates me more than people just thinking, oh, deathmatch is just getting in there and hitting each other with stuff. You just pick up objects. That's not how it works. That is a bastardization of the style without any study of it previously. You know, I always go to people like Sammy Callahan, Danny Havoc. You know, there's so many other people who, if you watch their death matches, it's not so much focused on, you know, the weapons. It's the story, and the weapons are worked in within the wrestling. That's how you make it good. You make it all mean something instead of just, you know, a shit show, for lack of a better word. So I think psychology is something that can be lost in deathmatch, especially when people see it as a stepping stone to just get attention. Oh, I'm bleeding. Oh, I'm doing a deathmatch. This is going to get me somewhere. If you don't respect the style, it's not going to get you anywhere.
Yep. Whether you're driving an old classic or a real piece of junk, the car market is hot. And that's why I want to tell you about rockauto.com, the one-stop shop for all the auto parts you need to keep your car on the road and in pristine condition. RockAuto.com has been in business for over 20 years. They have every part you need in stock at amazing prices. No reason to run around in different stores, websites, or auto shops. RockAuto has what you need in stock. And guess what? RockAuto.com prices are always reliably low. That means they do not change prices based on what's going on in the market. This isn't like an airplane ticket, a hotel, or even beef at the grocery store. The price of beef is through the roof. You won't need to constantly check to see if what you need is available, and if now is the best time to buy. Rock Auto keeps it simple and has everything in stock at reliably low prices. So go to rockauto.com. They make it easy to maintain your car and save money. It feels good knowing your car is in top condition. Once more, go to rockauto.com for great prices on auto parts and tell them we sent you. There's a box when you check out to put in our show name. The prices are too good for promo codes. Let's get back to the show. Do you have a favorite death match? Not of yours, of all time. Mine is Terry Funk Onita, exploding barbed wire death match, because of the story.
Definitely that match is up there for me. But to me personally, I think Sammy Callahan versus Danny Havoc, I believe it was Cage of Death 8, I want to say, was always a favorite ever since I was a kid. That match was the one that stood out to me.
Nice. I never saw that, but I know both men, and I know their reputations at what they did in a death match. Let me ask you this. Do you know, because a lot of people don't, in ECW with the staple gun that was made famous in ECW, the first place to do it, New Jack, and then if it wasn't New Jack, it was myself. Do you know that we never had staples in the staple gun?
I did not. I never, when I was younger, bothered to think about that when I was watching ECW.
And when we would do it, New Jack would sometimes take gum and put it, like a dollar bill, and put gum in your hair, which we'd have to cut your hair, or the sweat would just make it come out. Or sometimes when I would do it, I would take a Post-it and flip it in half and have that Post-it and just go and just make the sound and the noise. You really would squeeze it, but there was never, ever staples in the gun. So a lot of people, when I tell that to, especially like, because I've seen people legit get stapled. And I was
I see that all the time. So I'm I'm wondering who else has heard about this. Doesn't sound like many.
Well, I'm peeling back the curtain just for some of you. And then my other part, do you know that I have done everything. I will not do light tubes. And here's why. One, glass, you can't control, just like fire. You can't control glass or fire. I've been on fire and I've done a lot of fire and have gotten burnt. I've also not gotten burnt, but you can't control when it, you can't control getting lit on fire. You can't control the fire. You just got to hope everything gets time right. Glass, how it breaks, all that stuff, you can never control it, ever. Even on it, like if you're getting slammed in it, you know it could cut you different ways. Do you know that when you have to get rid of a light tube like regularly, it's considered hazardous material?
Yes, I am aware of this. And I mean, I try my best to not just be a raging maniac and have my mouth open when there's all that stuff flying around. Right. But, you know, I get in the moment, sometimes I fail. And but the glass, you know, like you said, it is very unpredictable. I've gotten cut from light tubes, obviously, just on very simple, just getting them broken over my back or something. But I don't know, man. I was like, there's just something, there's a sick feeling about just that glass. And I was like, I enjoy working with glass, actually, as opposed to other things. But
on that way with
the last time I tried to work with fire, it didn't light up for me. So that was a that was a big fail.
I get it with one blood. I also get it with, we used to call it being addicted to the blade. Now it's a lot more, you know, realer blood in the sense, I mean, it's always been your real blood, but like, oh, look, my back is bleeding, or oh, look, my arm is bleeding. But you definitely could get addicted to getting color every single night. You know, it works. Or I don't mind barbed wire. I was also probably one of the first to use razor wire. But that was not out of, that was stupid. And we needed barbed wire. And they literally went to a car garage in Manhattan and cut real razor wire. And then I bumped in it like an idiot on pay-per-view though. But have the scars on my body still from it. So it's all good, because I view scars as tattoos of a specific event that you will have forever. But barbed wire, I don't mind. Yeah, I don't like moving in barbed wire. But there's, once you get hit, and like even how we just had Jericho hit the barbed wire and his end cell of being entangled in this mesh, because I got to witness it live with Terry Funk and Sabu, and like, Terry could not move because he was wrapped in so much barbed wire, like physically couldn't move. Cause every time he's like, and then your adrenaline starts to go, he's like, all right, wait, so we had to cut him out of it for real. Like he was in a car crash. And then plus Sabu's pretty much bleeding to death out of his arm because he severed an artery here. It was pretty gnarly. Born to be Wired, by the way. That's the name of the pay-per-view if you ever check it out. So I could get all that. And thumbtacks never bother me unless they get my fingers, and then I hate them.
Same thing with the thumbtacks. They've always been super easy for me. I enjoy working with thumbtacks, but if they get in my knees and hands, I'm quite unhappy.
Normal conversations that people will never have, but you'll get this exclusively here with me and Masha. You're getting quite a push in Impact Wrestling. You had a really, really great wrestling match with Deonna, and now you've been kind of like this Goldberg-esque character that just comes out there and kicks whoever's ass put in front of her. And now you also have a thing that they're doing where you're targeting people with a death note? Is that what they're doing?
Yes. It all ended up coming down to this death note from my original idea of this kill wall that we had filmed earlier. So I guess with the crossed out faces with the blood, we just kept going with that. And now I'm hunting my prey and playing with my food psychologically before I get to them in the ring. And I like the fact, once again, circling back to death matches, that I am getting to incorporate more and more of like death, blood, videos of light tubes being smashed in the videos. You know, I'm getting closer and closer to integrating the death match. You know, hopefully one day we'll have an impact death match that we can integrate towards. Violence is a violence sells, blood sells.
It's a very unique niche, as well as it's a very unique niche for a female.
Definitely. So there's not many females, especially not, you know, of this caliber of professional wrestling, who voluntarily put themselves through this kind of thing. You know, most people at Impact certainly want nothing to do with glass and barbed wire, but it brings me joy, and it brings me joy to bring it to a wider audience.
Would Sami Callihan be a dream match opponent for you?
100%. I'm awaiting for that to happen one day, very impatiently.
How do you feel about intergender wrestling?
Of all the styles of wrestling that I do, you know, I mean, I suppose if we had to pick a favorite, maybe that would be high up on the list, because I, you know, being from Johnny Rods, pretty much started learning doing intergender wrestling, and that's all I knew. So I got good at it, and I always very much enjoyed it, because to me, it means no difference if you're a man or a woman or whatever. It means nothing. When you're in the ring, you're a professional wrestler, and that's simple as that.
Yeah, I was blessed. I loved mixed tag matches, and we always treated the women as equal as they should be, with like the women wrestled the men wrestled the women. I would be tagging with Beulah, and Beulah would be, we didn't do where once Beulah tagged in, you know, Shane Douglas had to leave. No, Beulah would wrestle Shane. I would wrestle with Francine. And then when I was with Francine, we would wrestle, like, you know, do mixed tags with Lance Storm and Dawn Marie, and, or it would be me and Francine versus like Jack Victory and Steve Corino or Jazz. I did mixed tags with Luna. Like, I always loved that. And I mean, ECW was also, you know, we did Luna versus Stevie Richards in a steel cage in 1995, which was unheard of. And Luna was bleeding. Stevie was bleeding. And it was a really, really good match, but it really spotlighted females as equals. And a lot of people, I don't think a lot of people give ECW that type of credit for putting women in the main event of a show, and all that stuff, also against men. And Luna was the toughest person, one of the toughest people I've ever been around. Bully Ray will say, Mula is the toughest I've ever met, guy or girl. And I mean, sorry, May, because I mean, think about May in her 70s, he dropped her off a stage and he was just like, and she was like, you hit me harder when he would do stuff with her. And he was like, she's the toughest woman I've ever met, which is awesome, and awesome for women's wrestling, as well as the progression of women's wrestling. You didn't, I mean, as a kid, you grew up in the era of like the TNA, not actual TNA, but like the Divas, correct?
Early 2000s, and pretty much all through the 2000s is what I, you know, really as a kid started watching. I definitely agree with you that ECW never got, you know, its credit for doing what it did. Like you said, putting women in the main event, it was, you know, ahead of its time, and kind of almost sadly, it's been kind of forgotten and overlooked. But I specifically remember not really having enough women's wrestling to entice me. And I was always excited to watch the men's wrestling, which I think for the generation that would perhaps be watching wrestling now and watching people like myself and Deonna, they definitely have more things and more women's wrestling that they would find to be memorable and inspiring as opposed to myself, in my opinion.
Do you have a dream match against a female?
Meiko Satomura is definitely still on my list. We've come like this close to wrestling. We tagged actually, but we did not get to have our singles match. She's definitely on the list. Can't name too many off the top of my head, but Meiko Satomura is a very, very talented and worthy opponent.
Nice. I agree, man. And I'm a big fan of your style, and I kind of know where your story is plotted to go. And then once I feel it hits, because you're getting a much different reaction when you're coming out there. There's, even though your matches are shorter, it's not that you can't have long matches, but you're this kind of like death slash killing machine of anything, any opponent that's put in front of you. But the whole Masha's gonna kill you chants that are starting to resonate every time you work. It's like, not only is this angle and slash ideas working, she's getting over. And once you come out there and have that long type of match, that's going to be the real testament. But if you really think about it, you already did that, but now it's a different character that you've really been able to kind of turn around. You know what I mean?
Yes.
You came and you had a long match, you got a contract. And then it was like, all right, once you, what do you do with her? And then you were made to this, like, you know, someone who's just coming out there and kicking ass, which is really, really cool. But do you feel it? Like the crowd, the fans, like connecting to you? Because when I was, I don't know how old you are. When I was 26 and I'm ECW full time on television, that was the first time it clicked and I got it. But as I'm older, like I like see things and I see things like this person's getting over, the crowd is connecting to this person. Do you see it or no?
I definitely see how it's changed over the course of the last, 7 months that we've been doing this now, since November or something. Mm-hmm. It's definitely progressed. And I feel like it does change city to city sometimes when we travel, but it's definitely, like you said, it's hit a turning point where the Mosh is going to kill you chants are coming, and it's, you know, you become the puppeteer, for lack of a better word. And I can feel that slowly taking place.
Nice. All right. Well, I know where your journey's gonna, I don't want to say end, but really hit its apex. And I don't know if you do, but I can't wait, because I get the best seat in the house. I always get to see it and watch you and do your stuff and critique. You got some great people in the back also helping you, especially with Gail Kim helping all the knockouts, and don't know if Madison would helped you out as well, but she's another person that I really, really enjoy her work. And you have a lot of people that really want to see everybody get over and do well, and I think it's a cool atmosphere that's goes on in Impact Wrestling.
I do think Impact has a wonderful atmosphere and a great locker room. I'm very thankful to have people, you know, like yourself, Gail Kim, D'Lo, and so many other great minds to, you know, feed off of, talk to, learn from. Lance Storm recently joined. He's another great mind to have watching your matches, or, you know, so on and so forth. I don't know where my journey is going, like you said, but I never really did. I never had a plan. I've always believed that I'm on a path and I am moving in that direction, and you just have to keep on the path and it all happens. It all falls in part as long as you keep putting in the work. So I don't know where the journey will lead me, but I'm enjoying the ride.
I love that. And your path will lead you where it's supposed to be because of your talents. And that's all I'm going to say for that. So I'm going to keep you excited and thinking and be like, whoa, Dreamer blew my mind on this podcast. Anyway, how do fans find you on social media?
I am on Instagram and Twitter and Patreon and Cameo, all of that good stuff, at Masha Slamovich.
Well, sweet. And I thank you for your time. I thank you. I know you had a long travel day already. I thank you for doing this. And as always, I look forward to seeing you and talking to you. And again, I look even more so to see your journey because it's going to be a cool one. So that's it. Thank you for being on this week's episode of the House of Hardcore podcast. This week with Masha Slamovich.